guys, listen, I'm excited about what you're doing. I'm going to say it again, but the chair I sit in, a little different than the chair you guys sit in. I get to watch from a different lens, okay? And I think you guys can all respect that. At the end of the day, I get to drive this bus, and I'm going to get it the way I want it. That's period. That's just how it works, okay? Al taught me a long time ago. You know, what is it, Al? Give it to me.
It's your team, you do whatever the hell you want.
When it's your team, you do whatever the hell you want. Okay, so this one's mine. So that's just the way it's going to be. And that is of respect of everybody in this room. But this is how we do it. And we'll always have these kinds of discussions because I'm only trying to make it better. Something we can do better, we're going to do it better. It's just that simple.
Don't know if that's really of the respect of everyone in the room, but that is the voice of the head coach, Hugh Jackson, on Hard Knocks last night. And we go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, joined by former offensive lineman, of course, a little cup of coffee with the Browns as well. And he's got the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, appropriately named Ross Tucker. Ross, thanks for taking a couple minutes. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So I just played the clip right there. A lot of people are, I don't want to say up in arms, but there's some debate going back and forth about whether or not Hugh Jackson handled the back and forth with Todd Haley appropriately. I'm assuming, because you consume everything football, I'm assuming you saw Hard Knocks last night. In that back and forth, I personally think Hugh Jackson, in saying, this is my team, if I'm going to go down with the ship, I'm going to do it my way, I thought that was the right way to handle it. Do you see it his way, or do you think maybe that he was a little too cold in being defensive towards Todd Haley?
No, I mean, I think ultimately, especially when you bring somebody in like Todd Haley, you know, he's the one that hired Todd Haley, and he listened to Todd's opinion, and he understands it, but that's not how he wants to do it. And if Todd Haley becomes a head coach again, then Todd Haley can do it that way. And I think it says a lot about Todd that he thinks enough of himself and wants to be assertive enough to let it be known how he feels about it. But ultimately, you got to do what Hugh Jackson wants to do. I mean, they always say to new head coaches or to guys that become head coaches, just one, the advice I've always heard those guys get is to do it your way. Because the last thing you want is to get fired and say, I wish I had done this, I wish I had done that. Do it your way. He took it into consideration. And by the way, I played for Hugh in Washington. He was a tough coach, man. I mean, he's not, like, easy on the guys, but he also doesn't want guys to get injured. And I've seen some analytics people, and even Joe Banner, who I respect a lot, you know, say that there's a lot of data out there, especially guys that have had soft tissue injuries, that giving them rest every once in a while is a smart way to go about it. Clearly, Todd Haley doesn't agree, and I don't think Jarvis Landry does either.
Yeah, so you played under Hugh Jackson in Washington there. We always hear the response, and people always say that he's too soft. He's coddling these guys a little bit too much. How was Hugh back when you were a player?
I loved him. I loved him, and all the guys that played with him loved him. In fact, he liked me enough that when he got the offensive coordinator job with the Falcons in 07 yes. under Bobby Petrino, he tried to sign me. So I went there on a free agent visit. They ended up failing me on my physical, so I signed with the Redskins again. Instead, I went back to where I had started my career. But I love the guy. He loved me because he really appreciated guys that love football and guys that practiced and played very, very hard. So I think that the perception of him being soft, to me, is a little surprising. Now, I haven't been there in Cleveland in the last 2.5 years, so I can't really speak to that as much. But I just know that's not how it used to be, that's for sure. And now, he was running backs coach the first year and then the offensive coordinator in title the second year, although Spurrier was the one calling the plays. But no, he was not soft.
Yeah, I just don't get that impression that he is either. He might be soft-spoken, but he's just not soft. Well, what do you think of Hard Knocks as you go through, and I'm sure it's got the same, you know, formula for years on end that way, but do they accurately portray what it's like being in those camps and what it's like being around you know, training camp as you get underway and you hit the preseason and you're off and running?
Yeah, I think they do a pretty good job. I mean, it's never going to be perfect, and I'm frankly surprised that even, like, the Haley, Hugh Jackson thing made it past the cutting room floor. You know, I mean, I think that there would be other organizations that would be sensitive to that. And the fact that that would be a big talking point. And then really, no matter what happens this season, you could either say Haley was right or Hugh Jackson was right, or, you know, they're not on the same page. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could take that. So I'm a little surprised that the Browns let that get out there. But I enjoy the show. I thought, you know, to me, the most interesting thing is a lot of times, obviously, what the coaches say amongst themselves, also some of the player interaction. You know, Carl Nassib talking about time spent on Instagram and, you know, compound interest. So that to me is hilarious. I love that. And I was there on some level. So it was kind of funny to see that.
Joined by former NFL veteran Ross Tucker. Of course, you can find him on the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, SiriusXM Radio, Westwood One. Ross, you spent your life on the line. Browns right now are trying to move Joe Bitonio to left tackle, trying to get Austin Corbett, the kid out of Nevada, to play left guard. How hard is it to make that transition from being one of the better left guards in the game to then just all of a sudden, plopped, here you are, now you're trying to replace Joe Thomas and you're trying to man up the left tackle position?
Well, it's not easy, but what I've noticed over the years is that the really great players, the really good players, they more often than not can find a way to get it done. And that doesn't mean that Joel will go out there and be as good of a tackle as he was a guard, but I think he has a chance to get it done. Like, I think if you put Zach Martin at tackle in the NFL, I think he'd be fine. You know, now, is there some parts of it that might not be ideal with his length or whatever? Yeah, but I think that the really good players, even the inside guys, a lot of times Brandon Scherff with the Redskins is another one.
Yeah.
I think if you put them outside, I'm not saying they would be Jason Peters or Tyron Smith, but I think that they can get it done and be at least an average starting tackle in the league. I think Joel's going to be able to do that.
On your football podcast, I see you discussed the Corey Coleman trade that went down on Sunday. Are you surprised the Browns just moved on and went for a seventh rounder in return? Obviously, it's kind of gotten away from him now with the news with Antonio Callaway, but there were drops and there were injury concerns over the past 2 years with Corey. Was it enough just to move on and wipe themselves clean of the Sashi Brown pick in 2016?
I am surprised. I thought he did enough that they would at least take him through this year, his third year, and see what he could do with Todd Haley. And then you look at, you know, Jarvis Landry as a slot guy. You don't know really what Josh Gordon's status is going to be. That's still bizarre to me. And then Antonio Callaway being a rookie. I thought that they would keep Coleman and see what he could do. I'm a little surprised that they basically gave him up for peanuts. I guess the positive is they get off the hook for that $3.5 million that they owe him the next 2 years. But, man, that is buying high and selling low. And the reality is they would not be doing that if it was a John Dorsey pick. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, if it's your pick, your guy, they get the benefit of the doubt. If it's the previous regime's guy, they absolutely do not get the benefit of the doubt. They must really not like that kid. And I don't know what he did, whether it was, in all sincerity, whether it's work ethic, or I don't know if it's work ethic or just how he was performing or the injury issues or whatever. But to trade him at this point for that basically tells me that they were probably going to cut him and they just wanted to get rid of him. They wanted him out of the building and they wanted to get something, anything in return. So it's interesting. I mean, he must have really, really not ingratiated himself with the new regime this offseason.
Are you surprised John Dorsey is taking chances on guys like Antonio Callaway? Historically, John Dorsey does this type of move, but the Browns don't need to win 10 games this year. They just need to win 5 or 6 and slowly move themselves towards the Baker Mayfield time here. Are you surprised that this early John Dorsey's rolling the dice to try to get W's?
I think that once you have success like he had in Kansas City with Marcus Peters and Tyreek Hill, that probably becomes addicting. You know, you probably think, hey, this is worth it. You know, I got both these guys later than they would have gone if it weren't for the issues. And they might not be perfect human beings, but when they were on the field, they made a big difference in wins and losses for us in Kansas City. Antonio Callaway can be that guy in the fourth round. But you have to know, when you take a guy with red flags, certainly as many as Antonio had, it's a really high percentage that they rear their head at some point. You know, not always right away, but I don't know. I had a scout tell me one time that it almost always, you know, it pops up. Now, I don't know if I'd go that far, but more often than not, for sure, it ends up becoming an issue. A guy with injury issues ends up having injuries. A guy with off-the-field issues ends up having off-field issues. I don't think there's any way, though, that John Dorsey thought, after missing a whole year of college football, that he'd already be in trouble before the first preseason game.
Joined by former NFL lineman Ross Tucker here on 92.3 The Fan. Yeah, I agree with you. How could you envision it to pop up this early? But now the receiving core is it's a lot quieter because the depth just isn't there, especially with Josh Gordon still not in attendance. But we move forward looking towards Baker Mayfield and his preseason debut tomorrow against New York. I know not to make a big deal out of preseason games, Ross, but what exactly should I be looking forward to at least show the signs that Baker Mayfield is on the right track to eventually take over QB1, or at this point, is it just all about it doesn't really matter what he does on the field, it's just getting him reps and continuing to see him out there?
I would say a couple things. You know, I'm not saying they have to be perfect by any stretch of the imagination when they're a rookie, but there's a pretty long history now of guys looking pretty darn good in the preseason, and it turns out they are good. You know, I think of Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott. I mean, Carson Wentz only played in one game, but he looked pretty good. And then at the start of the regular season, he looked good right away. I mean, there are some guys that they just kind of get it, and they're ready right away. I think what I would look for from Baker Mayfield is how comfortable he looks in an NFL offense, under center at times, doing the things that Haley and Hugh Jackson ask him to do. Just how comfortable does he look? And then does he show he can make plays? I never really mind if a guy makes a couple mistakes, because I feel like you can correct mistakes. What's really hard to do is make plays or create plays if you're not a guy that shows you can do that. So step one is make some plays, and if you have some turnovers, hey, we can figure out how to use better judgment, better decision-making, not do that. But it's kind of hard if you're being conservative and you're not making it. It's kind of hard to be able to coerce a guy into making plays. You got to show the ability to do that.
Ross, you yourself, though, you were undrafted out of Princeton, and yet you had to fight your way through injuries early on, if I remember correctly. What should I be looking for in signs for just some of these other guys that that are fighting for spots still? What could stand out for some of these players? Like, for yourself personally, like, what was the turning point where you put together, like, listen, I can not only do this, but the speed isn't fast enough for me. The game hasn't changed that much. I'm caught up here.
You know what's weird? You know, playing at Princeton in the Ivy League, I had built the guys up in the NFL so high in my head that I actually, when I got there, I mean, it was fast and everything, and they were big. I guess I just thought they'd be better. You know, like, you know, I used to watch, like, we used to sit there and watch, like, an Ohio State-Michigan game and think, man, if we had 13 guys on the field the whole time, how would we do? You know, because you know that some of those guys are such physical phenoms out there. So I actually, you know, did pretty well right away. And I think that was one of the things I always say to people is, whether it's the OTAs or training camp, they usually have a pretty good idea after the first 3 to 5 days.
Wow.
You know, you can tell the people that just belong and the guys that don't. And that might mean the guy ends up on practice squad versus active roster or vice versa. But you start to get a sense for sure of which guys can do what. I was hurt for the first preseason game, so I missed it. Second preseason game, I was going to play the second half of the game at left tackle. Chris Samuels got hurt on, like, the fourth play. So my first NFL action, I didn't even think they were going to put me in. They put me in there. I looked around the huddle, and it was like Michael Westbrook, Stephen Davis, Jeff George, Stephen Alexander. I mean, I had literally been playing Madden with those guys a year earlier. And I'm in the huddle with them, and I go out to the line of scrimmage, and it's like Patrick Kearney and Brady Smith and Travis Hall for the Falcons. I was thinking, holy cow. But, you know, I was able to hold my own. It wasn't pretty, but I was able to get it done. So look for the guys that are able to hold their own, and look for the guys, the young guys or guys you haven't heard of, that are getting reps before you thought they would. You know, maybe getting rotated with the ones, or maybe getting rotated with the twos when you thought they were a three, because those are the guys that have flashed so far in camp.
Good stuff to look out for. Before I let you go, tell me about the ball cannon. I know you've raved about it before. I'm fascinated how you're changing the game.
It's awesome, man. It's a buddy of mine from my hometown, actually. It's like a football launcher, football throwing machine. And every day they're posting different videos of kids doing amazing stuff. I saw one today where they must have made a shot into a basketball hoop from, like, 50 yards away. It was incredible. I tell people now, just go to ballcannon.com or Google it and just check out the videos, because it's pretty awesome. I think 7 or 8 NFL teams have them now. My 5 and 6 year old love it, to give you an idea of the age range with which you can use it. And the biggest thing I tell anybody that's a parent out there, you'll appreciate this, My kids like it more than their iPads or more than the playing with my wife's phone. I never give them my phone, but more than playing with my wife's phone. So if that's not a big enough sales point, I don't know what is. Go check out the video at ballcannon.com.
Ross Tucker, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.